Hello and welcome back. It's episode 65 of Campbell Conversations with your host, Colin Campbell. And today we are talking about founding and promoting a unique dating app for singles. Don't worry if you're not somebody that is interested in the dating app game, because this podcast does not just discuss dating apps. It's all about the psychology of business marketing and really understanding how to promote a product and tailor it to an audience and a demand from the market. To do so, we are joined by the co-founder of Thursday, George Rawlings. George is an incredibly interesting guy, and he shares his background in entrepreneurship and why he's chosen dating apps to focus on in particular, as well as some of the big issues that he thinks Thursday solves. We look at the challenges that dating apps in the market currently face and how Thursday's been built to tackle these head on and drive a better result for the user. It was certainly interesting for me to delve into a topic that I didn't really have too many strong opinions on. Getting a start out there and knowing how to drive downloads is something that George really dives in on and shares an awful lot of information with us for. And we learn how a false admission of cheating on his girlfriend drove £9,500 worth of downloads from just a £2.65 ad spend. George also shares with us his approach to funding and investor support, which was certainly interesting for getting a look into the startup world. And both George and I share our worst dating app experiences that we've had. And I'll be excited for you guys to tell us what yours are off the back of this podcast. This week's podcast, I'm delighted to say, is brought to you by MTN Coaching. Founder David Hatt has appeared twice in the podcast so far to share his wisdom on all things business and fitness. David heads up a team of six coaches who come together to form a leading online fitness coaching service with an array of different options for you to work with them. They provide bespoke programming to enable you to lose fat, build muscle while still enjoying your lifestyle and building fitness in to be a part of that. You can visit mtncoaching.co.uk and inquire today. That'll be linked in the show notes for you to get involved. And talking of getting ready for the dating apps and ready for life opening back up in the UK, you certainly want to be in shape to do that, and MTN can help. Lastly, before we dive into this episode, I just want to say a tremendous thank you to everyone that has shown their support for the podcast over the last number of weeks. Last week's episode with the Crypto Glasgow guys went absolutely crazy, and the podcast continues to grow at a rate of knots. It cannot do so without people like you sharing it with other people like you, and that is all I'm going to ask you to do today if you're enjoying these episodes. Without any further ado, let's get into my conversation with George Rawlings. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Cambro Conversations. And today we are talking all things dating apps. To do so, we are joined by one of the co-founders of Thursday, George Rawlings. George, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Delighted to have you, mate, and excited to dive into a subject that a lot of us sometimes get a bit of a visceral reaction towards, don't we, when it comes to dating apps and maybe some of the experiences related to them. Yeah. But you are bringing a bit of a fresh approach, aren't you?
Well, that's kind of you to say. I mean, that's kind of the idea, to be honest. We'll obviously go into what it is, but just in a nutshell, it's an app that's switched off 6 days of the week. It doesn't work. It literally tells you to go away. And we turn it on obviously a Thursday. Just in terms of what it does, it shows you who wants to go for a date that day, and you only use the app on that day. So it's quite sort of in the moment and spontaneous.
Yeah, that's a bit of a spoiler alert for the listeners, and I'm excited to dive into that in all sorts of detail, but every story starts nicely at the beginning. So how did we end up at this point, George? Who is George Rawlings?
As you said, one of the co-founders of Thursday. This started off as a bit of a bedroom project, 3 years ago. And here we are still on this journey where we thought, right, let's do something where we can meet girls. Basically, it started in that way, where we're like, we're single, we don't like dating apps, how do we meet more and be introduced to more girls? And that was literally where the idea came from. We were single ourselves. I still am single now, but this has kind of evolved from just as a bit of a bedroom idea to something a little bit bigger now. The idea was that we would put a honeypot, so we used to be called Honeypot, we would put a honeypot on a bar, And we would basically flood that bar with loads of singles in your local area. It wasn't speed dating. It wasn't a formal event. It wasn't ticketed. We would just get singles to that place. The problem with that was people didn't know who was there because of Honeypot. And it was people struggled to really break the ice with people in that environment. So then we thought, right, let's make an app and make the Honeypot on the venue. So when you're in that venue, you would check into the place and see who's single in that location as well. The problem we had, the safety aspect, was knowing who was single in that bar at that point is quite dangerous, especially from a female perspective. So we then made the honeypots much bigger. And the idea was you would check into an area when you're available and meet someone later that day. Got to about 25,000 users with that, which is great. But the problem we had is even with an app of having 25,000 users, maybe 10,000 active users a month, we still struggled to hit critical mass where we had enough supply and demand on the platform to really for the thing to function. So we then rebranded at the start of lockdown. And here we are with Thursday.
Yeah, I really like the honeypot idea though, as you say, because if you're in an area, you're available, you want to meet people, somebody else flags their interest as well. So you kind of cut out a lot of the inertia of setting up a date.
Exactly. And I've always been, it's so true. I mean, the values we've always had are if you match with someone on our app, you meet them later that day. The problem we had, as I said, was you still need, for that thing to work, you still need a shitload of people on the app for it to function. In terms of our story of what was pulling people in to use our app, is we pulled some very aggressive, unusual marketing stunts around London that got people interested in what we were up to. But the problem is our focus was not on our brand. It was us as co-founders and our story of us making a dating app. Probably went to our heads a little bit. And we got more carried away in the story and the buzz around that than actually the product. And we realized, right, it's time to go away and really make a brand around this. And how do we get people? What is it? What's the biggest frustration with dating apps? They're time consuming, they're unexciting. I really believe people are matching with people for the sake of it. You know, the amount of dates that actually happen from it minimal. You know, think of how many times you've been on a date with someone you match with from a dating app. Not that much, very low chance. How do we increase that chance of the date happening? Well, let's connect people who are in the same frame of mind who want to go on a date. And that is the concept.
Yeah, the concept has a lot of value in it because, like you say, nowadays we are more time poor than ever before. We're spending more time on our phone. And like you say, a lot of people are maybe using the apps, and I've certainly done it in the past, for a bit of an ego boost sometimes. You do a bit of swiping, you match with some good-looking girls, you're like, right, okay, I must be doing okay then. But do you actually take action on it? Do you actually meet up with them? Do you ask them for a coffee? Do you ask them to go for food? Do you ask them to go for a walk? Whatever is your cup of tea. It's quite funny how low the conversion rate probably is, and I guess that was one of the fundamental challenges that you were looking to solve. Were there any others that you were immediately trying to address?
I think you hit the nail on the head of what the problem we had was. You know, we've always looked at this in a way where we've almost overdosed on dating apps. We are matching for the sake of it. It gives us a dopamine hit. It's a bit like getting a like or a follow on Instagram. Oh, I've got a match, new match, brilliant. Bit of small talk, and then the spike happens here, and then it just dies off and nothing happens. So it was mainly to do with the aspect of, you know, minimizing that chat. But then we looked at it, of course, well, let's concentrate all our users into one day, which obviously brings us on to Thursday. And there's obviously a slight crossover here with the people listening, you know, what is this? Is it Thursday? Is it Honeypot? Just to say it again, Honeypot is what it used to be called. It's now called Thursday, where we've literally just simplified it and made the app work just on Thursday, we looked at it. Well, if we could connect people in the same frame of mind who are wanting to go to the date that day, the chance of the date happening with people you match with, let's say you get four matches, the chance of you going on a date with one of them is high. But if you get four matches on another dating app, the chance is low. So I'm not here saying, oh, dating apps don't work, because they do work if you put in the right amount of admin and time into it. But for me, this is all about, and the three things I bang on constantly about, spontaneity, excitement, and adventure. And that is what Thursday is all about, where you know every single week There's a new Thursday that happens. What's going to happen? It's the unknown. Who are you going to meet? Who's going to be on the app this week? Who am I going to go on a date with? Let's say last week didn't go that well. I'm not saying dates are going to go badly from this app, but let's say they weren't for you. Okay, it's a fresh week. Here we go. It's a fresh start. I think dating should be much more fluid and in the moment on a Thursday, preferably, and not such a big deal. I think there's a lot of expectation around dating where, you know, you'll match with someone, you'll talk to them for a couple of days, you'll then exchange WhatsApps, let's say, conversation will start to die, a week later it might pick up again. All in this time you've built up a picture in your head of what you want that person to be. You literally have thought, right, okay, so they're this, they're like this, and you're almost in denial a little bit, like they're going to be like this, they're going to be like this. You meet them, it's an absolute shit show. So you've wasted time and effort thinking what this person is like in your head and built up that clear picture of what you want them to be, almost romanticized the idea of it, and then you meet them and it's a fail. That's just my dating experience, and I hope that the listeners and people who use dating apps, this resonates with. But I think it should be much more cool. I've matched with someone. This app tells me he's free today. Jumped on a Thursday. Wicked. I'm not here, by the way, just to plug this app, but I keep saying the word Thursday for obvious reasons because I'm relating it to what I'm doing and what I'm trying to solve. But the whole goal is to solve this dating app fatigue culture where we're just sitting on there and it's disposable and you're jumping from one match to the next.
Yeah, appreciate you're not here to plug, George, but it's certainly insightful, and you're bringing a solution to the table for something that, like you say, is a genuine problem. And I was doing a wee bit of my reading beforehand to try and back up some of the things that I thought about your app and some of the assumptions that I had, and it was mostly US studies, but I think 70% of college students in the US had never met their match. So, wow. So 70% of people are on that app, almost three quarters are just using it for dopamine, and I think 45% of those said that they pretty much used it for confidence boosting procrastination. So straight away if you're on there for something more concrete and you actually want to meet somebody, you actually want to go on a date, then you are in the minority. Whereas if you download an app specifically that is encouraging action and face-to-face meeting and exploring and that whole adventure piece,
totally, I mean if we can tap into that 25% that have met people from apps, and you know, it is because it's, you know, Tinder were the first app to make it socially acceptable to meet someone from a dating app and go on a date. And of course every app's got their own identity. You know, Hinge started with friends of friends where you connect your Facebook, Bumble, the female empowerment, they've done a fantastic job over gosh how many years they've been going about empowering millions of women, and fair play to them. You know, you get lots of dating apps popping up all the time now where they've niched down into a certain category of, let's say it's for music lovers, or it's people who own cats, or it's vegans. I mean, really, what is the innovation behind that? You're just trying to take a little bit of the an interest and just put people together, you know, who share that interest. For me, I know that everyone has a Thursday. So we're trying to look at it where we're connecting people not based on just an interest, but based on time of when people are wanting to go on a date.
As a founder, you said you made some mistakes with Honeypot, hence the rebrand. Was the main one around restricting it to a particular really tight area?
I think the mistakes I made with Honeypot were, so your question on you were just saying about the mistake I made with Honeypot of restricting it to an area on the bar. That's what you meant. Sorry. Yeah. So it was a mistake. We made the assumption that people would want to use a dating app that only worked in a certain pub or only worked in a coffee shop. Remember, just think of the numbers you need for that model to work, where you've got five people in a small coffee shop where the app's functional. You know, it's not scalable and it's quite unsafe. So I didn't look at it in a way where, what's safe? Will people feel comfortable meeting other people from this app? I looked at it in a way, oh, I'm in this coffee shop, how do I talk to that girl? Which isn't the right way of doing things. Where I very much had my male head on, where it was, you know, I needed to come at it from a much more sensitive point of view. But yeah, I mean, we could go into lots of mistakes I made with Honeypot. My goodness, you know, a hell of a lot of mistakes. I mean, just to give you one, in terms of my biggest mistake with Honeypot, I launched with 217 pre-registrations on the app and only made it available in Clapham to begin with. I thought that 217 pre-registrations was going to be enough to get this to the tipping point where people would start talking, you know, an app would be the next viral thing in London. Firstly, it was a fairly mediocre app. It served the purpose and it did the job. It was very much an MVP, just a minimum viable product of what we made. But a dating app needs people. And if you don't have the people on there, the thing won't work. I mean, I think we had about 30 people check into the Clapham area when we launched. And we had basically had about 7-8 months of building the thing. Why were we not lining up the pre-registrations for when we did turn the thing on? We had the people on there. That was a big mistake. So if anyone thinks about making a dating app, make sure you've got thousands ready. Yeah.
And that's something that you've done this time around when it comes to Thursday. You've got that backlog of people ready and waiting to go. So was it last February 2020 you rebranded as Thursday? When was the official rebrand?
Yes, we announced it June 2020 that we basically were making the switch. We pulled it from the app stores May 2020, announced the rebrand in June, and then have been, well, we've kind of had it ready since November, but we just obviously haven't been able to turn it on because of lockdown restrictions, annoyingly. But yeah, it's all good to go now, and we've got about 93,000 people on it now, which is across London, New York, 60,000 are London, but that I think should be enough for it to work. It should be enough. And remember, the idea is, you know, and I think a piece of advice as well that I would give of anyone making an app, it's all well and good marketing your app and getting people to hear about your app. But the biggest problem apps have is retention. Are you going to get people coming back? You know, think of the amount of apps you download or you give a go. Let's say it's a game or something, you know, I don't know, a calendar or something like that. Are you going to be coming back? Because if you're not coming back, the app only has a shelf life. How do you bake in retention to what you're doing and what your product is? And I think in our case, we looked at that where we know it's a very competitive place, dating apps, you know, with the likes of Hinge, Bumble, Tinder, who are all very good at what they do. Hinge is a brilliant app, and I've got a lot of respect for them. But how do we, as the underdog, position ourselves where we know we're going to get people coming back? And of course, our concept, the fact that we switch it off when a product is, when something is in short supply and it's scarce, it makes people want it more. It's been really fascinating to understand the psychology behind this type of model where, you know, you switch it off and you can't use it all the time, therefore you want it more and more. And I really believe that solved the chicken and egg problem, especially with lots of apps popping up that are platform models when you've got two sides of the thing for it to work. You know, that has solved one of the biggest problems of a dating app, the chicken and egg problem, because it's all done on hype, anticipation and excitement that this day comes around where the brand is around the day for singles.
Yeah, working in sales, you're talking my language here, George, when it comes to scarcity and a little bit of restriction and that kind of bleeding in the kind of carrot for somebody in terms of this is the day when you can get access to these things. But outside of that, you can't. And then straight away you're kind of helping to model people's calendar, because I'm thinking about challenges with dating apps before for me myself, and I've used them, and like you say, when you match with somebody and then you're trying to maybe fit in each other's schedules, with this you remove that straight from the question, and unless you're free on the Thursday, then you don't date that week. And that's quite a healthy position to be in.
And we say 6 days of the week, you know, go spend time with your friends, your family, live life. Go talk to the person that you bumped into on the tube, you know, take risk, go, you know, literally, you know, meet people in person. Don't waste your time with dating apps. They're a waste of time, but actually use one where it's going to be effective for you and fun and exciting, because dating should be exciting. But I think dating apps, how they're currently done, has sucked the life out of how fun they are and how exciting they should be. You know, no one wants to say they met on Tinder, really. No one wants to really say it. And, you know, even though apps are socially acceptable now, you know, there's much more of a story behind, I think, pinning it all on one day. It's you wake up one morning, you think, right, it's a Thursday. You don't know who you're going on a date with that day. And surely, you know, I don't know if you're single yourself, that is more exciting, not knowing who you're going on a date with. You'll know you'll go on a date that day, but you'll find out during the day. When you match with someone, there's a bit of small talk, there's a bit of back and forth, and that's romance.
That's romance, as you said. And I think authenticity is a terrible buzzword nowadays. However, if you meet somebody more spontaneously off the back of a match that same day, you have less time to build up the maybe the persona that you might want to put on when you meet somebody. And therefore, you strip back the challenges of maybe putting on a front on that first meeting, so like setting up a second meeting and then thinking, oh shit, how am I going to be myself? When do I start to introduce this part of my personality? Whereas if you're a bit more calm, cool and collected, you deliver your real self on that first meeting and it works, fantastic, carry on. If not, plenty more fish in the sea. There's plenty more Thursdays in the year, George.
Exactly. That's the idea. If, you know, we're trying to build this community where, you know, and this is a question I get asked. Okay, so it's Thursday. You match with four people. Not going to go on four dates. Okay, well, I, you know, what do you say to the other three matches if you don't go on a date with? So let's say you match with four people and someone says, hey, let's, you know, the question, are you free this evening on Thursday, doesn't exist, obviously. But if someone said, I would like the community and the people who are using this app to say, hey, love to meet you on a, you know, in a few days' time, because I'm actually already going on a date with someone tonight. I'd love to meet you though. Or, okay, wicked, I'm going on a date at 6:30. However, at 7:45, you know, do you want to grab a wine? Line up multiple dates. Why not? Don't come back with the answer saying, sorry, I'm not free, because it doesn't make sense. If you're not free, don't use our app.
Yeah, you're filtering for that. And I think that makes total sense. You mentioned obviously some experiences you've had with dating apps. Are there any other features from dating apps that you've got on Thursday that you were kind of influenced by previous experience by yourself or some of the other founders?
Yeah, I think the, you know, when with the dating app profiles, if someone says write a bio, you don't know where to start. You know, it's a very backwards way of looking at a dating app. It's hard to engage with it. It's hard to write it yourself. You don't really know what to say. And, you know, Hinge were the first people that introduced the prompts. And I think the idea is sound, and lots of dating apps have, I don't want to say copied, but have been influenced by what Hinge have done, be it calling them questions or calling them conversation starters. We're going straight in saying they're prompts, because they are prompts, aren't they, really? And we will set those prompts that, rather than tell me, you know, on Hinge, that Hinge basically will let you write the prompts and put them into the app and you respond to what the prompts are. So it could be something like, my most irrational fear is, and you would write an answer to it. It's a conversation starter with people looking at profiles. Or, you know, my favorite travel story is, you know, at the end of the day, no one cares about your favorite travel story. Say that on the date. We are trying to make our prompts all about the day itself. So for example, it'll be, tonight I want to be ordering, tonight I want to be doing, tonight I want to be, I want to go out for cocktails and have oysters. Like, it could be just something random, but the point is we're trying to pin those prompts, which Hinge have done so well, on time and on the day, of course.
Yeah, so it, like you say, it's almost helping somebody that's approaching that person via the app to make plans that meet both their needs and meet both their requirements. Not to worry, George. Whereas some of the other prompts that you're seeing on Hinge are more conversational starters, whereas this is linked to, yes, conversation, but also direct meeting conversation in terms of, this is how we're going to arrange what we do this evening.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I mean, imagine if you had one of your prompts as, tonight I want to, and imagine if you wrote, go for a round of mini golf. You know, if you saw that on someone's profile, you go, oh cool, well, if I match with this person, they want to go on a date, it's like, we're playing mini golf. I mean, it's not rocket science. I think it's just, it's been looked at in a way where other apps have overcomplicated things. I think we're humans. We want to get face to face as soon as possible. Why is this whole thing of this, well, we're going to now use, you know, AI to determine what personality you need to be matched with based on your Myers-Briggs test? I mean, come on, don't want to be rude, but nobody gives a fuck. I mean, really? So that's kind of, we've taken Hinge of what they've done in terms of prompts and put that into app, but made the prompts very time sensitive. We've also incorporated the best part of Instagram, which is the stories feature. So we have built in a function where people can, of course, just, I don't know, take a selfie or take a picture of their coffee at their desk saying, does anyone fancy a drink later tonight? It brings the profile to life. It's about personality. And of course, people are so used to doing stories. And if we want Stories is majoring in the app quite a lot. The way it operates is, you know, you will see on a map around you of who is around your vicinity and single, and let's say they've done a few stories. So we're trying to bring the whole thing to life through in a much more visual way.
Suppose you can bring more of your personality through the stories as well, because obviously if you've got your prompts that are very much action-based in terms of what people's wants and desires are in terms of activity, then at least with the stories, you maybe bring to life maybe what they're doing for work, what they're doing socially. Are they out exercising? Are they out having a coffee? Whatever they're up to, it kind of brings that element to it as well. So I think that's an interesting feature. And is that unique to Thursday? What do some of your competitors?
It is. No, I mean, there are literally thousands of dating apps out there. And I know a few of them will have got story feature in there, but we're trying to major on the aspect of stories, because of course they don't just, if you did a story at 3 p.m. on a Thursday, it's not lasting 24 hours. It's lasting until midnight on a Thursday, because everything disappears, you know, on a Thursday. So that'll be a fun part to really jazz things up a little bit and make it again, much more exciting. And as you said, more personality.
You've mentioned safety continually when it came to Honeypot. What are some of the safety features that you focused on for Thursday?
Good question. Taking safety very seriously with what we're doing. Our concept quite radical in itself, the fact that you are matching and meeting someone that very same day. It's sort of breaking the rules a little bit with how dating apps work, which I think is what we all want anyway. But safety is number one priority. We verify everyone coming onto the app. So I think within the app, what happens is you verify yourself using your driver's license or passport or national ID card. And the only way you can get onto Thursday is proving your identity. We have a code of conduct. And if you break the code of conduct, you will be thrown off the app. We take no prisoners. So behave yourself. Don't be a dick and play by the rules.
Yeah. And I think when it comes to that verification piece, that's probably one of the key reassurances that a lot of people need on the app, because I think catfishing is now just so common all social media, but also on things like dating apps where somebody's using other people's photos and you may be talking to somebody and you could expose yourself to maybe meeting somebody that isn't like that. And I certainly know one of my kind of unpleasant Tinder stories was meeting somebody that looked nothing like their photos, but was similar enough to have been them. They weren't using somebody else's photos, just heavily edited. But the reverse, the kind of extreme end of that, George, is you meet somebody who is absolutely not that photograph, and that can be dangerous from a safety perspective, but also just from a disappointment perspective, because you're like, what's going on here?
And I think that the focus of the safety aspect is, you know, is people who are bad people of this world, you know, the paedophiles out there that we need to, you know, get, you know, by verifying identities, it's a deterrent for what we're doing. You know, don't come into this community if you're not gonna, you know, play by the rules at all. It, you know, that's something that dating apps struggle with. We can't say, well, hold on a minute, you've got a filter on this picture, you're off the app, because people like to put the best pictures of themselves on their profiles. So we can't say, you've taken a selfie, you verified yourself with us, but actually you don't really look like that. So that's a very hard one for us as a technology company to be able to solve that problem. It's more the fact that we're using verification as a deterrent, but also knowing who absolutely everyone is. And if should something go wrong, God forbid, we know exactly who that person is.
Yeah, exactly that. And that's that reassurance piece for users. It's that reassurance piece for friends of users or family of users who are saying, oh, I'm going on a date tonight using this app. They're like, okay, who are you meeting? Well, this guy and everyone on here is put their license details and whatnot, or their passport. And it's a little bit, like you say, of a deterrent from maybe some of the more unpleasant possibilities.
Yes. So,
one of the big things that brought you to my attention, George, particularly on LinkedIn, I think it was some of your marketing activities. You spoke about it, particularly regarding Honeypot. What are some of your more infamous stories there that you'd like to share with us?
Yes, well, we had to go down the route of, we didn't have any money for digital spend, you know, so when you've got literally no money to run ads, and of course ads will gobble budget quickly. That's the nature of why Facebook's such a massive company. We had to be creative of what we were going to do to get people to download our app. So we did, as I said earlier, we achieved about 25,000 downloads from Honeypot from holding up pieces of cardboard or popping whiteboards outside tube stations with messages on them, or doing it was some quite aggressive PR stunts that got people talking. The idea was that whatever we did, and they're always done in public in London, you know, outside a tube station or in the city somewhere. The idea was that people would stop, look at what they've seen, and then reach down and basically get their phone out to take a picture. If they were doing that, we knew we were going to go viral, because of course that would be straight onto their story. Oh my God, look what I've just seen. To give you an example, you might have seen some of the things that were very successful. I duct taped a huge piece of cardboard to my body and walked around a bank area of London, and the sign said, I at George Rawlings cheated on my girlfriend and this is my punishment. P.S. Do not download Honeypot. Of course, you see that and you think, my God, what a wanker. He's cheating on his girlfriend and this is actually his punishment. That's hilarious. Right, straight away, photo, that's jokes. What happened? The streets were lined with people of taking pictures of this because, oh my God, what a scandal. You know, have you seen this? Have you seen this? Have you seen this? Then people would start to catch on because we would drive people to my Instagram or my Twitter. Look, what you saw was a PR stunt. We had to get your attention in some way because we can't afford expensive marketing budgets. P.S., you know, when it says do not download Honeypot. But obviously we said, P.S., do not download Honeypot if you're in a relationship. The amount of downloads that brought in one day, we had about 11,000 people download our app just from that stunt, just from in one day on a marketing budget of 25 quid. That is hacking your way through and getting as much eyeballs on and people talking about what you were doing. The problem we had, as I said earlier, the app was an MVP. It was very much a beta version of what we wanted to get out there. It had bugs. There was no brand behind it. And I think when dating is such an impersonal, important part of someone's life who's single, obviously, they want to use something and be associated to something where actually they don't know who the co-founder is. And they're not just following some 28-year-old who's held up a sign with his AirPods in outside Bank Station. They want to be invested in something that they trust. And it's cool because I think when you put your face behind something, especially with the dating app, and this is where Honeypot went, the story, as I said earlier, was all about us. It wasn't about our product or our brand, you know, and we knew that. People were following us. They didn't care about our app, really. The app didn't have much identity. What was it? Oh, it was a dating app. You can meet someone that day. Really? Well, okay, it sounds too good to be true. Anyone who starts that will have the problem we had, numbers on it. And especially, we were pulling some great, great marketing ploys, but they were downloading off the back of, oh, I'll give this a go, and then they're deleted the next day. The app wasn't good enough, the product wasn't good enough, and the focus wasn't on the brand of what we were doing, it was on us. And it was fun, but I wouldn't go about it that way again.
Yeah, I'm gonna. First of all, I've nothing but praise for that marketing stunt. I think that's absolutely hilarious. I think I saw somewhere that the piece of cardboard and the pen to write that cost you about £2.65, and your downloads were worth about £9,500 in terms of what that would normally cost you to drive through Facebook or something like that. So that's remarkable. However, one of the important things you touched on there is that you were a little bit fur coat with no knickers, where you were very much big and brash up front, fantastic. But when it came to the delivery of the app, it wasn't quite where it needed to be.
Yeah.
That's a valuable lesson for you, George, as a founder. Look at where you are now in terms of the volume of downloads you've got. But you also know that when the app switches on Thursday, whenever we finally get released from this lockdown period, it's going to be exciting because you know that the app's going to deliver in terms of the features it's got. So the license verification, the stories feature, the fact that the app will facilitate people meeting on the day when they're ready and go. So that must give you some excitement, I suppose.
It really does. I mean, I take comfort in knowing the way we learned so much with what we did with Honeypot. We learned so much about the industry, the market, the importance of brand, the importance of what people really want. We made the assumption that Honeypot, use this every day, or a dating app that's available every day and you can use it all the time. People don't want that. They want something they don't have to use, but they still want to date for it. But I do take real comfort, you know, sitting here doing this podcast with you, knowing that where there's the blueprints of this business model written in permanent marker on the floor below me right now, of what I'm trying to do. It's that clear in my head of exactly what this thing is. I take comfort in knowing I learned so much from Honeypot and I don't regret it one bit. of everything I did and how I got myself out there. Why? Because it's got to the position I'm in right now. We managed to raise funding off the back of it. We put our neck so far on the line, we made ourselves vulnerable. When you make yourself vulnerable, people buy into your story. And that's what they were following. We knew that, and we played up to that massively. It was our biggest strength. And it's got us to where we are now because we went down that route. Nothing was going to stop us. We had to make this work. And I'm not saying I've made it at all. I'm saying I'm in a good position right now that things have been done differently, where people are wanting what we have. And people, the brand is doing the talking. The product and the concept is doing the talking, not necessarily my guerrilla marketing.
Yeah. It's really interesting because a lot of entrepreneurs will talk about personal brand. Now, you've got your personal brand through your marketing, but you're also now very keen to make sure that almost Thursday, although people that listen to this podcast will know that Thursday is George Rawlings, one of the co-founders, but they won't necessarily, if somebody picks it up off the back of one of their friends recommending the app, they're not going to have a clue it's you that's behind it, which is definitely a good thing for your longevity. Also, it means you can have a tidy exit to a PE house down the line as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for me, it's not, we had a bit of the limelight for a good 9 months while our app was available. And we were just desperate, desperate, desperate for someone to download this. And if we got written about, it was the biggest deal ever, but guess what they were writing about? They're writing about the marketing, not our app. And I think we've had a little bit of the limelight, and I'm not interested in the limelight. I'm interested in building something that serves a purpose for single people to really enjoy using every single week, that gives people something to look forward to. They know they're going to go on a date from it that day. They know it's going to be fun. They're part of something. And that, I take real comfort in that, of knowing that I think we've got something quite special here that resonates with people. And they will want to use it, providing we deliver on the app, which we will. We've positioned it where people are going to enjoy it. But yeah, I take comfort in knowing that we've done things very differently.
You've driven downloads from guerrilla marketing, as you've christened it. You obviously need funding behind this, as you said. What are some of the main ways that you've been managing to generate that through maybe more traditional?
Yes. So my advice for anyone fundraising is, even if you have a business and you think, right, I need to raise funding now, don't look at it that you need to raise $500,000 or $1 million or something like that, or you need to go to a VC. There's this term called agile fundraising, where it's literally raising 25K of someone who's got a deeper pocket than you. That's a lot of money. 25 grand is a lot of money, and you can go far with that. Look at fundraising in a way where you just need a little bit to get the idea off the ground. And LinkedIn is a fantastic place for getting through to the right people. However, the only way to get through to the right people is by doing something different. Do not post on LinkedIn, I've got made a pitch deck. Email me if you'd like to see my pitch deck. Pull something bold. It's the only way to cut through the noise. I mean, the story where we needed to raise a little bit more money for what we would for Thursday and everything. The idea that we did was we did one of our signs, because we were known for doing signs, and we stood outside a Lamborghini garage saying, does anyone know anyone rich? I mean, of course, I was out there for literally probably 5 minutes before the security guards came out from Lamborghini and chased me down the street. The point is, I got the photo that went on LinkedIn that helped me secure the remaining amount of money of people knowing that I'm prepared to put my neck on the line and just go for it. And I'm not saying, oh yeah, anyone can write signs and hold up signs and put them on LinkedIn and make noise. It's, as you said earlier, the term that's been overused, authenticity. Whatever you do, do something that's going to be unusual, because I think right now there is so much going on, and there are so many pitch decks out there, and so many people wanting funding. Even if it's your neighbor who's got a deeper pocket than you. And that's how the first investor came about, by the way, a guy called Jim Lawless, who is a motivational speaker. I just sent him a cold email that I spent hours writing, and because I'd taken the time and I spoke his language and communicated with him on quite a personal level of what I was doing, he bought into me. When you're raising investment from the start, pre-seed, it is friends, family, and fools. It's called the three F's. When I say fools, it's the people who are not saying you're going to lose your money, but it's known as the three F's. Go out to people and don't be afraid to ask for people for money. Even if you know them, I'm not talking about I don't know, your parents or anything like that, but I'm talking about people you know that have got some cash. Go out there and ask them, what are they going to say? No? If they say no, okay, move on. That's fine. Thank you very much. They'll appreciate you asking, having the balls to even ask. So that's my view on fundraising. Just reach out to rich people. Be where the rich people are.
Yeah, exactly that. And you've, like you say, you've communicated it in the right way. You've delivered your message correctly. And you've got a proposition. They should get
exactly. And I'm not saying you go out to anyone rich with a shit business model. It's about having something tight and knowing what you're doing. Get in front of them, and when you have the opportunity to, you know, pitch them, you pitch your ass off, because you know you've got their time of day. It's not just any old idea, and they'll see that. And I think they'll see that you've got the drive. I don't like the word passion because it's overused, but if you've got the drive and passion, I think people who are smart enough should see that in whatever you're doing.
Of course. So you're launching initially in London and New York. Do you have plans to go wider than that? And if so, what would be the triggers for that to happen?
Yeah, so the plan is for April to be in New York and London. Come May, we are going more national in the UK, likes of Liverpool, Manchester, Cardiff, Dublin, also Glasgow. That's the plan as well. So, this might be of interest. And then in June, we're going to be looking at the other major European cities, the likes of Berlin, Paris, Amsterdam, and then be sort of trying to take it. Obviously, we'll already be in the US, but to the other cities there, the likes of Miami, San Francisco. But, you know, we are growing aggressively. We've got quite a clear structure of how we want to grow. And the only thing really stopping the scalability of this, like lots of businesses, is money. You know, we will be going out for our big round next, but we might not need to. We might feel we've got a good steady growth from self-funding it ourselves from the money we make. But we're not here to sort of just keep this in London and see what happens. I think we've got something interesting here that needs to be scaled fast.
Yeah, versus Honeypot as well, it's got much more scalability because it doesn't require the same level of focus on one bar or one pub. It is
absolutely
wide. It's very, very wide. I guess one of the things I thought about was things like Tinder have like a premium package and stuff like that. Are you going to build that into the app, or is it very much going to be for users to have free initially, or is there kind of different levels or tiers?
Yeah, I can share with you, because I think by the time this comes out, Thursday will be available. It's all on the hush-hush of how we're monetizing, but I will share that with you, absolutely. So we've got freemium, where you get 10 likes a day, standard dating app stuff. So our VIP package is go Thursday VIP and you get unlimited likes, you're boosted all day, and you remove your visibility cap on how many people you see on the Thursday. But the last point is we unlock Saturday for VIP members. There's an entire day exclusively for Saturday. We're not, Thursday's our big day. Okay. That's where loads of people, this is just a sweetener. You can have that. We know we're going to get enough people wanting VIP to have double the fun each week.
Yeah.
Spot on. That's kind of our monetization strategy of getting and there are only 25,000 VIP passes available.
I think that's exciting. And again, it's that scarcity concept, isn't it? But also with that scarcity comes some added value for them to unlock extra days as well.
Exactly.
So I think that's been incredibly interesting to dive into that with you, George, and learn much, much more about your business model and you and where you've come from and the things you've learned over this period. But I thought as a little bit of a hopefully amusing finish to this, you would be able to tell us one of maybe your worst experiences of going on a date through a dating app.
Yes, okay, I can. It was when I was living in Cheltenham. I was, 24. I was on Tinder and I agreed to meet someone at the train station because they were coming from Worcester, and they, you know, got to the train station there and was picking her up. Arrived, I was like, gosh, you look lovely, but you're quite smart. She said, yeah. Well, this is just sort of uniform for me. I went, uniform? What do you mean uniform? She was still in the sixth form. So that lasted about 10 minutes and put her on the train and said, I'm really sorry, but you have lied to me on a dating app of your age. I can't take this any further. Thank you very much, but I think you're going to have to go home. So that is my story of a dating app fail that happened to me, where I basically met someone at school. But yeah,
You've also tackled that with the passport verification on...
Yes, exactly. They were, I mean, so I was 24 at the time. They said they were 19. They did clarify to me they were 18 and they were in the upper six. But still, for me, I know there's nothing illegal here. It's just my own... I can't do that. Come on.
The moral compass.
It's not right.
No, I've certainly met people before who've maybe not looked quite like their photos, but probably the funniest one for me would be, I think we're three dates in, so that I'd kind of verified them a little bit, George. I've met them on Tinder, and we were playing playing mini golf, which again, you hinted at earlier, is a good first date you might have on the app. And they were getting increasingly agitated. I play golf, and I'm okay, but mini golf is a bit of a lottery, isn't it?
Yeah.
But they were getting a bit agitated and they were determined to keep the score. And I was running away with it, doing quite well. Yeah. And it was quite a crazy course. I can't remember, but basically her ball went way off to the side into like some kind of like jungle stuff.
Yeah.
Went and got it back and I was like, I'll hit your shot again. She put her ball down on the tee, turned round, the group behind us, another couple, took a full swing, screamed and hit it at them. And I was a little bit alarmed by that because she'd been quite calm over the other two dates. Nice girl. Showed a bit of agitation about mini golf, and apparently that was enough to unleash her rage on the couple behind us with a full swing. So I don't know if there's any way to filter out people with anger issues on the app, but I think that would be an interesting one for us to
anger meter. You know, you put in front of them a game that is some behavioral therapist that's put in the app where it understands how angry someone's going to be. That would be quite interesting. And if they get a certain level, you'll filter out those people.
But they can hide it for two whole dates, George, until it spills over. So
yeah.
They're very clever. Yeah. They're very clever, these individuals. But aside from that, George, I've absolutely loved chatting with you. Yeah. When is it? Maybe by the time this comes out, the app will be available wider. But for a lot of the listeners, they're maybe based in cities outside of London and New York. When do you expect the app to be available for them to download on their phones?
May. So it'll be available to download, but in terms of us, you know, getting the numbers on in the area, we'll be talking May time where people will be able to use this in likes where you are. I've really enjoyed it, mate. Thank you so much for sort of inviting me on. I haven't done one of these in a little while, so I've probably been a little bit rusty. But no, I really appreciate your time and everything.
No, we've covered lots and lots, George. And if people wanted to connect with you on a personal level, I know it's all about Thursday night, but if they've got some feedback on this,
LinkedIn, ping me a message on LinkedIn. I'm happy to have a chat with someone,
I'll link George's LinkedIn profile in the show notes below. Thank you again for listening, guys. If you've enjoyed this, please take a screenshot, share it on your Instagram story, tag myself at call.cambro, give me your feedback, and maybe send it on to a single mate who is using dating apps all wrong. And I'll be back to speak to you all again very, very soon.